after a brief interlude during the season of Advent and during the season of Christmas, we're returning this to the great big Jesus story this morning. You may remember that beginning this past fall, we started following Jesus' life kind of chronologically through the Gospels. You know, we haven't really focused on one single Gospel, but instead have followed Jesus' life chronologically through the various Gospels. And so we pick up where we left off a few weeks ago with today's reading from John 10 that we just heard. Now, back in 1972, I remember watching a documentary in high school. It was based on a popular book at the time, and it was narrated by Orson Welles, and it was called Future Shock. Some of you may remember that movie or that book, Future Shock. It was all about the rapid technological change that the world was undergoing and how that was going to kind of leave everyone just shell-shocked from it. And a lot of the stuff it predicted way back then turned out to be pretty close to spot on. For instance, they talked about the electronic frontier that was coming, that today we call the Internet. Some of their predictions haven't quite worked out. No one I know wears disposable paper clothes, for which we can all be thankful, especially when it rains all week like it's supposed to do this week. And some of the things that we have today, they predicted back in 1972, but they don't quite behave exactly the way they said they would. For instance, they predicted video phones, where every time a call came through the wired landline, a live picture would just automatically accompany it. And I waited for a long time for that because I thought that was cool. And finally, we have it. It's called FaceTime, and it is, in fact, awesome. Because when our kids were little and we lived in Montana and both of our grandparents, their grandparents lived in Minnesota, the only way they got to see our kids with any regularity at all was when we took a roll of pictures, brought the film into the drugstore, waited for it to be developed, then went back to the drugstore, picked them up, brought them home, wrote a letter, put the pictures in the envelope, stamped it, mailed it off. Sometime later they would get it, and by that time the kids had learned to walk and were getting ready for prom. Okay. But now, with FaceTime, we can see and talk to our grandkids, bam, anytime we want. And what's fascinating to me about that is that even while they're still so young, okay, we have four of them, three and under, even while they're still so young, they know it's us when we call. They can be playing on the floor with their toys, whatever, but when they hear our voices, they stop what they're doing, and they come to the phone, and they lean into the camera, and they slobber kiss it all over the lens. Okay? They hear our voice from what amounts to thousands of miles away, and they recognize our voice right away, and they know it's us. They know it's us and not some random person, not someone else. And the reason I think that they recognize our voice, even through a speaker and a screen, and they're so young, is because we call them regularly, and at some point along the way, they've sat on our lap, they've been taken up into our arms, they've heard us tell them that we love them, they've felt our lips brush their cheeks, they've felt the warm air of our breath on their face as we've spoken their names, and they've heard our voices as we pray their bedtime prayers with them. And as a result, they've known themselves to be loved and to be claimed and to be cared for and to be told they're precious. And that's what they associate our voices with. So when they hear our voices over FaceTime and they see us on the screen, it's not just the sound of the voice they recognize. It's the love that they've known that they recognize. And it's a voice that also knows them. And that, maybe, is the 21st century equivalent of what Jesus was getting at in the lesson that we just heard from the beginning of John 10. Now, the truth is, I'm a city boy. I spent a couple of weeks living on a farm as an exchange student when I was in high school. And then I went back to that very same little South Dakota town for 3 months the summer after we were married. And I've watched sheep being sheared, and I've ridden in a combine, and I've trekked out to the barn before dawn to help with milking cows. But a farmer I am not, nor a shepherd. So I was interested to find out that one of the big differences between cattle and sheep is that you drive cattle from behind. You push them forward. But if you try that with sheep, it's not going to work, because all the sheep, what they're going to do is they're just going to turn around and run and get behind you, because they prefer to be led. And they won't go anywhere that someone like their shepherd doesn't go first. And what's more, not only can a shepherd identify their individual sheep because they give them names and those names last for a lifetime, but the sheep know who their shepherd is. And the shepherd can communicate with them through different sounds that mean different things. Okay? So, even today, for instance, in the Middle East, when Bedouin shepherds lead their flocks from various pastures toward home at the end of the day, and they all gather together with other shepherds and other flocks around this one single watering hole in a mob of thirsty sheep, bleeding and pushing and timid and greedy. I mean, no one worries about a mix-up. When it's time to go home, the shepherd will just issue his distinctive call, and the sheep will leave the crowd to follow him home. They know who they belong to. They know their shepherd's voice, and that voice means food and rest and security, and so it's the only voice that they will follow. That's really all any of us want in the end, isn't it? To have someone who knows us deeply and intimately, to know that we matter to someone, to experience ourselves as claimed and loved and cared for and precious. Maybe that's why the image of Jesus as the Good Shepherd strikes such a chord with people. I mean, we don't know much about sheep, most of us don't know anything more about shepherding than we do neurosurgery. But we do know about warmth and security and being cared for. And we may not know any other part of the Bible, but when we need a Bible passage to comfort us or to cling to, invariably it's the 23rd Psalm that we turn to, huh? The Lord is my shepherd. That psalm has been read at countless bedsides of those who are preparing for surgery, and those nearing the end of their life, and those who are saying a final goodbye. It's the psalm of the shepherd who lays down his life for his sheep, who knows his sheep by name, and who leads them through dangerous valleys to still waters. And though we're far removed from that kind of agrarian experience, we know instinctively that when Jesus speaks of himself that way, he's talking about the qualities of one who nurtures, of one who protects, of one who knows us intimately and will make any sacrifice for us, of one who will claim us and take care of us. That's what Scott was desperate to find. I sometimes thought of Scott as my saran wrap kid, because Scott could emotionally cling to you like that clingy sandwich wrap. He was a member of my youth group back when I was in Washington, and whenever my doorbell rang, it would be Scott. "Hey, Pastor Joe, want to see my new cassettes?" That places it in time, doesn't it, huh? It was 1986. And then he'd haul out travel case after travel case after travel case of cassette tapes, hundreds and hundreds of them. And I knew he was prepared to describe every last one. And there was a knock on my office door. I'd open it. There'd be Scott, ready to discuss in excruciating detail each new episode of any science fiction movie or any TV show he had recently seen. I mean, I could live my life without a watch or a clock during the week, because I always knew precisely when school let out, 20 minutes before Scott arrived at my office door. If Scott was in my living room, it must be Saturday or Sunday afternoon. Of course, when you try that hard to be liked, no one likes you. And so Scott was a very lonely soul. There was a poverty in Scott's spirit, a hunger for more than just food, a thirst for more than just drink. His need was so powerful, so overwhelming, so insistent that to be near him too long was like being caught in the sun's gravity, where it pulls you ever closer until it finally burns you up. Sometimes when I saw Scott coming, my first instinct was to run away. Run away! Run away! Save yourself! But at the same time, he just broke my heart because Scott needed more than I could give. As much as I wanted to, I could not be all that Scott needed to be. But I knew there was someone who could. I was only there for 2.5 years. And over time, after that, I lost track of Scott. But I prayed that Scott found what he needed, because what Scott craved in his saran wrap way was to be cared for, to be loved, to be smiled at by someone, anyone who would say, I hear you, I see you, I know who you are, you count to me. And so we spent a lot of time together, and I hoped in the process that Scott might learn to listen to a voice that was not mine, but that maybe occasionally sounded like mine. Find a love that transcended what I and the world could not give. Know a security not dependent on the transient, conditional acceptance that the world around him offered. Because it was the good shepherd that Scott needed, the voice of the shepherd that he needed to hear, the promise of a shepherd who would call his name, who would lead him beside still waters, who knew him, who cared for him, who could fill his soul, who would lay down his life for him. And that's all any of us really need, though so often we have such a hard time admitting that. And so is it any wonder that we have such a difficult time picking out the shepherd's voice from among the other voices competing for our attention, all promising what they ultimately cannot deliver, like good health or happiness for our children or relief from pain or inner peace. There's only one good shepherd, only one shepherd's voice. All the rest are distractions. And if we keep our ears tuned to his voice, he promises in the psalm that we will not want. I am the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. But see, that doesn't mean that we're going to get everything we wish for. It means we will at least never be in want of the one thing we need more than anything else. The one thing without even realizing that we want more than anything else, the shepherd who knows our name, never withholds himself. The reason we can trust his voice, says Jesus in verse 11, it's the next verse after the end of our reading today, because his good shepherd discussion continues all through the chapter. The reason we can trust his voice, says Jesus, is because he is the good shepherd. He's not some random hired hand that has no investment in the sheep. Now, the staff, church staff, had lunch together the other day, and we got talking about our early jobs, and it was really kind of surprising how many of us had jobs in which our main goal was to find ways to take naps. Okay. I think I won. Because in college, I had this job as a night desk clerk at a motel. Okay. And so I'd sit behind the desk and watch TV till somebody came in, and then I checked him in. And then about 10 o'clock, it was bedtime. And so I'd just go flip on the no vacancy light, go to bed, get up in the morning, 8-hour shift, did nothing the whole time. It was awesome. Was that bad? Was that bad? See, the thing is, I was a hired hand. Nothing more. I knew I'd go to work, I'd get my paycheck, I'd cash my paycheck, I'd go back to school. Okay. The hired hand, says Jesus, does not care for the sheep. He's mostly out for himself, no matter what he tells you. He doesn't own the sheep, which means he doesn't involve himself. He's not going to risk his own life to protect theirs. The good shepherd, on the other hand, lays down his life for his sheep. That's what makes him good. He knows who belongs to him. He recognizes each one. He speaks their names. The Good Shepherd, he knows all of us, every last one of us. He owns us. So if you've never been owned before in your life, completely and thoroughly owned, never had someone so desperately committed to you that they would do anything, sacrifice anything, give up everything, simply and only for you. Well, you have a shepherd who owns you now, and a flock to which you belong. See, what matters is not that we are good sheep. What's crucial is that we have a good shepherd. We belong to the flock, not because we're always certain of God, but because God is always certain of his ownership of us. And so some days, let's just be honest, you believe valiantly and heroically, and some days you believe pitifully and maybe not at all. Some days we're firm in our faith. Nothing's going to shake it. And some days the doubts overwhelm and the fear begins to creep in. Some days we can hear the voice of our shepherd as if he's whispering directly in our ear. And some days we have a hard time picking it out amidst all the noise in our life. But Jesus does not say, hey, check out all these good sheep. He says, I am the good shepherd. And that means that you belong to the flock simply because he says it is so and has claimed ownership over you and knows your name and speaks it the day you're baptized and speaks it this morning when we come forward for his meal and all the times in between. So, listen for his voice. You'll recognize it when you hear it. Sometimes it's loud. Sometimes it's barely a whisper. Sometimes it's going to sound familiar. Sometimes it'll sound like something you just weren't expecting. But you'll know it is his voice when it points you away from yourself and when it reminds you of the love that you have been shown, when it comforts you when you're trembling and strengthens you when you are weak and challenges you when you're lazy, when it sounds like a voice leading you through the darkness, or when it sounds like the soft shedding of tears because what you need at the moment is just someone to hold you and cry with you until you're able to love and laugh and hope again. And when, in the end, it sounds like the voice of the one you've always longed to see and embrace, welcoming you home to a life with him that never ends. And one of the very best places to hear that voice is in the middle of the flock. So stick close to the flock, because it's not only your best hope for survival in a world filled with wolves, but also for joy.